November the 5th is getting closer and closer. We need to be preparing. How do you prepare? Get your sample ballot. Get your sample ballot. Your precinct committeeman will usually distribute that, and do some homework. You can use iVoterGuide.com for federal and statewide offices. On judges and amendments, it's harder. I would suggest you look in your state for a family institute or a family policy council. Usually they have voter guides and they'll help you with more local races. But also, you can do a lot. All you have to do is search the judge's name, the candidate's name, and you can find out who's supporting them, who's giving them money. What is their past like? What did they do for work? Just look for clues in the bios, even on their website, or even, you know, Wikipedia gets some things right occasionally. You can find out a lot about people by just searching their name. So do your homework. Please don't go into the voting booth and leave half the boxes blank. Just don't do that. Everything is important. Amendments change your constitution. As an Amendment 4 in Florida on abortion, abortion will be legal for all 9 months. It will be in the constitution, almost impossible to change. And you probably have amendments like that in your ballot too. So don't be lazy. You can find this stuff. If you don't know how to look on the internet, then ask your kids, ask your neighbors, but be diligent. Go in there with that sample ballot, armed and ready to vote, and check every single box intelligently and not just guessing. All right, November 5th is coming up, and I'll see you at the poll.
Now, new developments on the chaos at the Capitol. A Pensacola man is accused of being involved in the riot 2 weeks ago. Jesus J.D. Rivera arrested by FBI agents today. They were alerted by Rivera's own social media posts. Cody Long has more from Pensacola, where Rivera appeared in court.
This arrest is one of more than 100 so far in the storming of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. The evidence against Jesus Rivera comes from his own Facebook videos on that day. The FBI released these screenshots. Prosecutors say one of the three videos shows Rivera in a crowd of rioters inside the U.S. Capitol before he climbed out of a window. Several times he turned the camera to show his face, which is Exhibit B in the U.S. Attorney's evidence. They say that is key to proving he was the one who shot the video. Rivera was released Wednesday afternoon after he went before a judge in the U.S. courtroom downtown. He was seen leaving with family members. He's now facing 4 federal charges for his alleged actions once he got onto the Capitol grounds. Rachel Rojas is the special agent in charge of FBI Jacksonville. She said, "We will not tolerate those who seek to incite violence or wreak havoc on our established institutions. We will continue to hold individuals like Jesus Rivera accountable for the violent actions at the U.S. Capitol." Anyone with information about those involved in the deadly riots can call 1-800-CALL-FBI, or you can submit photos and videos at fbi.gov/U.S. Capitol. Reporting in Pensacola, Cody Long, WKRG News 5.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Well, you see how odious it all is. J.D. Rivera, Jesus Rivera, sounds like a criminal to me. He actually turned the camera to show his face. And he's, you know, his alleged actions in the Capitol, they couldn't think of any in the moment, but it must have been something bad, you know, because you know how those people were. They were insurrectionists. The inferences, you know, the way they say everything. And this took place, you know, a few years ago. And the FBI, of course, is all over it. If you have any, if you can report your neighbors and your friends, you know, here's the phone number. If you know if they were at the Capitol, you should call us so that, you know, you could rat them out, because we know how terrible those insurrectionists were. It's just all such a lie. It was a lie then. It's a lie now. And people's lives have been so shattered by what this Justice Department has done, and what the lies, the stories they've spun about Russian collusion, the stories they've spun about COVID, telling us that the vaccine would prevent the disease, that it wouldn't have it, promising us it was safe, not even testing it on our children. The number of stories that have been spun by the media and the government that's in charge now is overwhelming, and it's done so much destruction. And then the issue of January 6th, it just keeps continuing because they keep arresting people. Because friendly neighbors and relatives and people who are just, you know, they call them sedition hunters. They comb the Facebook, they comb the internet, still looking for people who happen to be there on that day who have not yet been harassed and maybe sometimes arrested like J.D. Rivera. Well, you're going to hear his story today because we met J.D. at the 1A Film Fest just a couple of weeks ago in Texas. And so we had a long discussion with J.D., and you can kind of listen for yourself and see how much of a criminal you think he really is. Well, this is Sandy Rios and Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on social media platforms. You can listen on any podcast platform that you like, the one of your choice. Just look for Sandy Rios 24/7. You can go to afr.net, Apple, Spotify, or you can listen at sandyrios.com. Well, you've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's really important to me personally. Let me just be frank with you. We must save them. And that's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing moms with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. Once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? While the left fights to take their lives, and they do fight to take their lives, it's amazing. Preborn's network of clinics fights to save them. And to date, they have rescued over 300,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free. The ultrasound is just $28, or $140 helps rescue 5 babies. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't stop giving. And together, you and I can save lives. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And make your most generous donation. All right. Well, you're in for a treat because J.D. Rivera is charming, interesting, inspired. And his story is worth the listen, I guarantee you, on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something. Well, here we are at the 1A Film Fest in Greenville, Texas, at the Texas Theater. Texas Cinema, I think it's called. Anyway, it's a beautiful place, just a beautiful place. And as we are going to be talking here, there are movies showing in the other room. Last night we saw the first movie, which was just stunning. And I will be telling you about that in one of these podcasts. But it was about child trafficking. But you probably thought you knew about that. But I guarantee you, you didn't know what this film has revealed. It's shocking and disturbing. It's disturbing to see that the United States government is cooperating and making it possible, and somebody is making money hand over fist, trafficking even babies, even little babies. They're doing the most horrendous things. I sound like Donald Trump with the way I'm describing that, but I'm just telling you, we'll get to that in a discussion probably later today. But I want to talk to J.D. Rivera. J.D.'s one of the cameramen here, or the cameraman. How do I describe you, J.D.?
No, I'm a cameraman for His Glory. Actually, I work in production for His Glory.
Okay, what is For His Glory?
So His Glory, right here, www.
Beautiful. You got the lion and...
HisGlory.tv.
Okay.
We are a Christian production company, online Christian ministry, and okay. I work in the production side of things.
That's
so
cool.
So I'm back here getting B-roll, social media stuff, things for the 1A Film Fest.
Okay. All right. Well, J.D., we just briefly chatted last night, and I don't know your story, but all I know is you spent 8 months in the D.C. gulag.
No, not D.C. I was sentenced to 8 months into prison, federal prison.
Okay.
And I did 6 months, but they sent me to Jessup, Georgia.
Jessup, Georgia. Mm-hmm.
6 hours away from my hometown.
Oh, wow. Well, did that help that you were 6 hours away from your hometown?
Did it help?
Yeah.
No.
Well, I didn't think so. I mean, I you know what? There are some J6ers near me in mm-hmm. Florida, and we can't see them. You know, we can't. They're so restrictive. They're still being so mistreated. It's not like the D.C. gulag, but no privileges, and they just make it really hard for us to even go visit.
Well, the D.C. gulag is a little more mainstream because it's an easier place for people to go see as far as being in D.C., walking around D.C.
Oh,
not
no.
going into D.C.
Yeah, I was
going
to say no. Not
but I'm
going,
talking about, like, getting to D.C.
Getting there.
Like, yeah. Jessup, Georgia, while I was in prison, it was kind of in the middle of nowhere. If you look up Jessup, Georgia, there's nothing around there at all. But they do. They separate us in different areas. And the D.C. gulag is only one of many problems with inside the BOP. Being, you know, if you could talk to different J6ers from different prisons, you can see that the problems inside the BOP is the same all around.
It's a tragedy, incomprehensible tragedy, which I've talked about since January the 6th. And you've lived it since January the 6th. And so let's go back to that because you have a story to tell, a great.
Kind of a testimony.
A testimony, yes. Let's say that, J.D., that I like that. So everybody has to ask, and I'm asking, why did you go to the Capitol on January the 6th or go to the rally?
So for a backstory real quick, I've been working in film since 2012. I was in the Marine Corps from 2002 to 2012. Got out of the Marine Corps in 2013, moved to New Mexico, where I started my film career. 2017, we moved back to Pensacola, Florida, where my wife and her family's from, and worked for my church a long time in the production area, you know, getting their production going. And then I got back into film myself. I started my own company just to do independent work, and I had a pretty good voice for, you know, on social media. I was well known. Actually, I was known as the Chicano Patriot, you know.
Chicano?
Yeah, Chicano.
Chicano Patriot.
Chicano Patriot is what I was known as. You know, it's my heritage. I'm Mexican, but born and raised in the United States, in California. But we were in D.C. Me and my wife went to D.C. for that. We were going there to document the events. We had some people that we were following around, and we were telling stories, getting interviews, the whole works. January 5th, obviously, was really fun. January 6th was fun all the way up until the Capitol. And don't get me wrong, I'm a Marine Corps vet, so it still kind of was intriguing to me, everything that was going on. There was an excitement to it. I was excited that I was getting history on camera. I was finally behind the lens getting history. I knew it was going to be in history books. I knew we were going to hear about it. I did not know that it was going to send me to prison. I thought I was doing, what I was hoping was this was going to be what gets me mainstream. This is what's going to help me pursue and push my career further because of the influence that I had on a lot of Americans in California, Texas, and Ohio, of all places, based off of the way I spoke about our First Amendment and the Constitution and President Trump and being a conservative Christian, all of that, and being a Hispanic man. You know, this is the face of white nationalism, I guess. People say, you know, they hear
yes,
white
it is, as a matter of fact. And so is what, who is it that's been called a white nationalist who's just very black? I'm just going blank. They do that. It doesn't matter, you
it
know.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No.
About your color. It's just an
now
it's, pejorative they put.
Yeah, now it doesn't matter. It's whatever they want you to be. That helps fit their narrative. You're a white nationalist if you think this way. You're a white supremacist if you think this way. It doesn't matter your skin color or what you're thinking anymore. It's all about being white, which whatever. That's fine. But the problem is there's a lot of us who, like myself, went to prison on misdemeanor charges. Now, I've got zero criminal record. I have a pretty solid record. 10-year Marine Corps vet, honorably discharged. You know, I don't like confrontation. So being at the Capitol on January 6th, getting that footage was just doing that. I was gathering information to get it out to the masses. I was actually live streaming as well on Instagram, and then when Instagram would cut out, I'd go to Facebook. I'd try to live stream wherever I could. And all of the information, I mean, I have the videos out there on my YouTube channel. There's actually a gentleman by the name of Luke Mogelson who works for The New Yorker. Now, I have a side-by-side comparison of my video and his, and it's identical. We go up the same steps. We go through the same window. We go down the same hall. The difference is once I get to the crypt, I leave and come out. I'm only in there for about 33 minutes. Luke Mogelson stays inside the entire time. He documents everything.
From The New Yorker.
Luke Mogelson is the one that they used his video to impeach Trump. Now, Luke Mogelson and The New Yorker are obviously very, very left-leaning individuals. Luke Mogelson didn't have his life trampled on. He didn't have the FBI raid his home. He didn't even get misdemeanor charges. I did. And my video shows clearly that we did the exact same thing, but they are very selective on who they're charging or who they're coming after, which is obvious.
You know, people actually believe that now. They didn't when we first started talking about this. We collectively, I don't think people really believed that. You know, they saw those horrible videos right up front, and the narrative was set. You know, the minute it hit the television, you could see. Now we see, looking back, it was already in the works. They baked in the cake. The whole term insurrection, all of that, that just came out immediately from the anchors. They all repeated it. Now we know the drill, that they repeat words and they coordinate. And so they labeled it that. It was it's horrible to look back. But I'm curious about something. You guys are taking the same video of the same thing. Well, you and I both know the Capitol's huge, and that some really horrible things happened in the tunnel on one of the entrances, but some nothing happened. People were just walking through peacefully. So where were you and what were you capturing along with Luke? What were you capturing?
So I was like I think I was probably like the third tier of people who actually came through the Capitol that day. Luke Mogelson was one of the first ones that came through.
So he was already in when you got.
Yeah, he was probably inside the actual Senate chambers at the time when I went in, but he was the one that followed the QAnon shaman guy.
Oh, no kidding.
He's
that
the
wicked
one
person that was, his life was ruined for doing nothing.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Except for, I mean, even being escorted through the Capitol by Capitol Police, you know, but he was a threat and they were willfully walking him out, walking him through the Capitol to try to get him out. But Luke Mogelson, again, he was in longer than I was. He did more than me. And where were we going?
What did he capture? What did he capture that got that they used for Trump's impeachment? What? Because there's so many things you could have seen that day. So what did he capture?
That's where we're at. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I get so caught up.
You're
on
too
Luke Mogelson.
Young for that, JD. You're not supposed to forget this stuff.
I did 10 years in the Marine Corps. I think I have a little bit. So I captured. There's video and footage. Obviously, you can go on my website or my YouTube channel, Arver Films, which is my last name spelled backwards. A-R-E-V-I-R Films. And you can see my side-by-side comparison. And what I captured was there was a lot of stuff going on, right? I captured when the cops were throwing pepper spray and pepper balls and flashbangs at the crowd.
From the balcony onto the peaceful, was a peaceful crowd before that happened?
Before it happened, I got video footage of the police officer antagonizing supporters down there, literally like, come on, you want to fight kind of stuff. I also got, you know, footage of supporters fist bumping and shaking hands and talking to the Capitol Police inside the so basically mine was different from Luke's. Luke Mogelson, only thing he put out was all the stuff that where people were fighting and arguing with cops. Mine was the exact opposite. Mine, I mean, you did see the chaos outside that ensued. You did see, you know, the mob of people walking up the steps. I wasn't included in that group of people going through. Mob mentality is mob mentality. All you had to do was light one match and get it all going. That's all it took. And at that point, that's what it was. But it didn't help that you had Capitol Police antagonizing the individuals. And I do have it on video where they were shooting into the crowd. Now, as someone who's a 10-year Marine Corps vet who did work on a riot patrol platoon, in MCRD San Diego 2 years in a row, I could tell you that we were never told to shoot pepper balls into a crowd of people to draw them closer to you. The whole thing you do is you shoot them at them or towards their feet to push them away. It's not what the Capitol Police did. They were shooting in the middle of the crowd.
Yes, you know, I've heard them described as firebombs. Is that not right?
Some of them, the flashbangs.
Yeah, the flashbangs. Yeah. Because I shouldn't assume that. I'm kind of assuming that my audience knows what you're talking about because I've talked about it so much, but I shouldn't do that. Because there are several scenes of that, and there are people like that. One guy got his cheek blown out, and you could actually see his gums. And
yes.
And people were, and there was, I think some pants caught on fire. Mm-hmm. And it was horrible because prior to that, JD, is it true that prior to that, it's kind of a well of people? I'll describe it that way, because the police are up on top of the... It looks like a, I don't know what you call it, it's like a castle, it's not a castle, but it's a high and lifted up place where they're looking over, and the people are singing hymns, as I understand it, patriotic songs, they're waving their flags.
Yeah, absolutely.
And was it really that way when they began to fire into the crowd?
In certain parts of the crowd it was. You got to understand, there was well over a million people in that crowd, well over. And in different parts of the crowd, there was different things happening. So what was happening in back when you had people praising and worshiping, singing the national anthem? I mean, even when I was in the Capitol, Trentis Evans, he's actually somebody that I got on film before I knew him. You can hear him walking through the Capitol with his megaphone doing the national anthem, you know. So that's what was happening. Even after the fact that people started going into the Capitol, there's still a lot of people just, you know, USA, USA, Pledge of Allegiance, singing national anthem, God Bless America. Like, there was still a lot of positive stuff going on. There wasn't people trying to cause any damage, at least not in the crowd of people that I was with.
Yeah.
Now, there were people in front of me that, obviously, I got video footage of people breaking windows, people, you know, fighting with a couple police here and there. I did get that, but that wasn't all of us. That was a small group of individuals compared to the crowd size.
I think we know now, JD, that the people breaking the windows were not our friends.
No, not all
of them. We've identified now lots of those people, and they're caught on video. And of course, the FBI has never arrested those people.
Well, they've had them on the FBI watch list and then taken them off.
Yeah, so and it looked so bad. But and then you can see in this one video, and maybe you took this. I don't know. This guy is, you know, trying to break the window, and one of the a young man, like early 20s in the crowd, says, "Don't," you know, tries to stop him, and then he the guy breaking the window turns on the kid, and really just kind of
makes it seem like that kid
intimidates
was
him. Yeah, and the kid is just stunned. Mm-hmm. Like, what?
And then they don't know who this guy is randomly.
We still don't know. Do we know who it is?
Not that I'm aware of. And I can tell you right now, being there, being in the Marine Corps, you can see the suspicious actors. You can tell the people who weren't really a part of the crowd, who weren't really Trump supporters or just conservatives, or weren't there in support of what everybody else was there to support of. First off, all of us, even though we were cold, I want to say a majority of us didn't care to wear a face mask. Like, we're already against that.
Exactly.
We're already like, we're not doing that.
No.
So if you were hiding your face for the most part and you were causing damage to the Capitol or fighting with the Capitol Police, mm-hmm. you were there for that purpose. And you most likely are not a part of what we are a part of as far as our, you know.
Well, look, you could say that. We could be naive and say, oh, our people would never do that. But the Make America Great crowd, mm-hmm. Trump supporters, have a history of large gatherings, huge gatherings, mm-hmm. where we don't even leave trash on the lawn. It's a peaceful gathering.
That's what people were doing in the Capitol.
And we love police. Mm-hmm. We support the police. We fought for the police. So any action, the opposite of that, there has to be an explanation.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, going into the Capitol, at the end of it all, we had people walking around cleaning up the Capitol. Like, our people were walking around cleaning up the Capitol. Picking up trash, putting things back in place, trying to make it look well, because those are the kind of people we are. And I'm not saying that, you know, again, I'm going back to mob mentality, right? There's individuals who caused chaos, and there's a select few of individuals who followed suit. Mm-hmm. Not saying that we're not all like that. People pick and choose their battles, and they just felt that this was a time for them to do what they saw other people doing. But that wasn't the majority of the crowd.
Well... Look, Mike Waller's a good friend of mine. Mike is a national security expert, and he's an expert on international, like the Orange Revolutions and all of that, communism and the violence that comes with it. And so Mike just decided to go down that day. He lives close to the Capitol, and he's actually the first person I ever talked to about this. Mm-hmm. He described the whole thing before we knew, I mean, all that we know now. And he said it was just so peaceful. It was just such like a rally. But the thing that he noticed as an expert, that there was hardly any police presence anywhere.
Right.
He said it was just amazing. He said, this is ridiculous. They're going to the Capitol and there's no police presence. But he described the crowd as just happy grandmothers, people who could hardly walk. Sometimes in none of them were wheelchairs, but having trouble walking, older, mm-hmm. and children and all of that. Would you go to the rally?
I was everywhere.
Okay. All right.
Well, let me ask you this question. Have you seen any footage from January 5th that you're aware of?
I did from downtown. I've seen Ray Epps, mm-hmm. you know, inciting people to go down to the Capitol tomorrow. I've seen mm-hmm. that.
So negative footage. Have you seen any positive footage from January 5th?
No.
Have you seen any positive footage from January 6th?
Well, yes.
for
well,
the most
let's see.
Part.
Well, oh, not on television. No. Maybe because I do what I do. You know, right. Of course, I've seen some really good things of people.
Exactly.
But no, mostly, you know,
the masses won't see any of the good stuff.
No,
masses,
I know.
They don't want to show the videos that I have. The FBI took my gear, my equipment, and they still have not returned it.
Are you kidding me?
Mind you, I've done my time in prison. I'm off probation. I'm a free man again. And they will not return my equipment. They will not return my videos.
So you don't have your own videos?
I don't have any of my stuff. So we're going on 3 years and I haven't gotten anything back. And they continue to say they're not going to give it back. Now, I'm only one person of many who have that kind of stuff. What are they trying to hide? There's stuff from January 5th and January 6th they don't want people to see, which is positive stuff. And stuff that they'll prove the people that were in the crowd that were informants. Things like that. Now, they don't show you anything from January 5th because of how great it was.
What was the 5th? I don't even know.
January 5th was just another day. We had praise and worship. There was everybody in the crowd.
Were you around the camp? Were you on the elliptical? Or were the residents?
The ellipse and everything, yep.
Okay, ellipse.
Around that area by the White House.
Okay, all right.
But here's the crazy thing. Again, as a Marine veteran, you can see when something's kind of wrong or not right.
Off, yeah.
And you were talking about the video of Ray Epps talking about inciting, you know, the violent.
Hang on a second. I just said describe Ray Epps is a very big, distinct. You can spot him in a crowd because he's so big.
Yeah.
And he is. There's a huge crowd. I guess that's where you guys were. Was that on the 5th where
that
everybody
was?
Was?
Yes.
He's saying, you can hear it on the video, we got to go to the Capitol tomorrow. Go to the Capitol.
No, he says, we've got to storm the Capitol. So, we got to go inside the Capitol is what he says.
That's right. And people around him go,
Fed.
Right.
So
yeah.
I was there. I was down there.
Oh, no kidding.
I was there on the 5th. I got some video footage of that as well. Okay. Again, I don't have my camera or my equipment back, so I don't have any of that footage, which I would love to see my perspective because I remember that happening. But here's the thing. I went to a lot of rallies prior to January 6th. A lot of rallies. And that's what my job was. I got hired to go to all the rallies and talk to other and interview other people that that are not white, you know, black, Hispanic, Asian, you name it, to show and prove at these rallies that this isn't a white nationalist thing. This is an American thing. And that's what was my job. So I was doing that prior to January 6th. On January 5th, let me go back a little more. At every single rally, we always had a clash of people. And it was always either Antifa or BLM or the mixture.
Exactly,
At every single rally. And it was always a pretty good size, 100, 200 people going back and forth. You know, I mean, my bus got eggs thrown at it because we had this big RV that said We the People, 1776. Everything
that's
patriotic.
Terrible. How could you put that on your bus?
Golly,
you should be ashamed.
The flag, the flag raising Iwo Jima. All that stuff. Everything that would make someone on the left blood boil. But, you know, going through that and having these people try to attack our bus and attack our rallies, when I went to the Capitol, excuse me, when I went to D.C. on January 5th, my thought process is I'm going to capture something violent on this camera between Trump supporters and BLM most likely, because the BLM Plaza, the main place, is there in D.C. So I'm like, this is gonna be crazy
with the big BLM letters streetwide sanctioned by the Muriel Bowser.
Mayor. After all of our events on January 5th, when the night was over, the little praise and worship and the stage performances and everything was over, we went to BLM Plaza. We said, hey, there's something going on at BLM Plaza. We go to BLM Plaza, walking down with a group of people. And when I get there, what throws me off is there's a bunch of police standing in front of that line to keep you from out of the BLM Plaza, right? And there's hundreds of Trump supporters in that same area where Ray Epps was, same exact area. That's where we were. But when you look in the area where BLM was, there's like five or six people in there. And to me, that was off. That was very off because
they've caused trouble
forever.
Everywhere, and also at the inauguration.
Yes.
They're always violent, you know.
So this one time, they're missing?
Yeah,
they're not present?
I felt the same way, because Bruce and I were at the prayer rally, that huge rally right before the election, where Jonathan Cahn spoke, and Franklin Graham was there. Anyway, there were thousands of us, and we did see Antifa. My husband is former FBI. He's the good FBI, by the way.
Good.
We know we talked a lot about him carrying, you know, because of we figured there would be violence because that's what they did. We were there during the inauguration when they attacked people going into the inaugural balls.
Right,
and
right.
I mean, they were just to remind people, this is what was happening. So to me, it was very weird that on January 6th, we didn't see Antifa. We didn't hear from them as far as we know.
Mm-hmm.
So finish your thought about that, JD.
No, that was just a simple, it kind of brought me back to Iraq. I served in Iraq in 2004, 2005. And just so everyone knows, I'm a POG, person other than grunt. I was not an infantry guy. But I was augmented to 1st Marine Division in 2004, 2005. And I deployed with them, with 1st MARDIV, the infantry unit. And so I got to go on convoys, I got to go on patrols, and one of the things I remembered was being on a convoy, driving down the market, and you're driving down this area that's fully populated. There's people on the left, people right, people trying to sell stuff, there's a lot going on, slow traffic because it's a convoy going through, and then you take an immediate right, and when you get to the right, when you start going off the beaten path, all of a sudden, it dies. There's not a soul inside, it's just quiet, it turns into a ghost town. And as you continue to drive forward, probably another two or three blocks, you start seeing people on the roofs. And you're like, okay, this is a very bad thing. Something bad's about to happen. Something's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, you start getting pops, right? People start shooting at your Humvees, and you just got to floor it out there and pray that God's going to protect you the whole way. But that's what it felt like that day on January 5th. We were coming into on the 5th. You know, going to the BLM Plaza, I expected to see something. But the way it felt was the way it felt when we took that ride into that area where there was nothing happening that you thought should have been happening, and it was just quiet. And the only ones that were being loud were Trump supporters, right? But there were some people there in that crowd that were I believe were there to cause division between Trump supporters and other people, fighting the cops, arguing with the cops
on the 5th.
And these are people that I have on camera that I don't have my camera or my stuff back yet, but I would love to figure out, because there's people that were in that crowd that I believe needed to be looked into, that knew that something was going on, but we don't see footage other than the Ray Epps footage from that day.
Well, that was J.D. Rivera. That's the first part of our discussion at the Texas Film Fest. Great stuff. And now we're going to turn our attentions to what actually happened on January 6th from his perspective. So you don't want to miss that right after this. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/sandy. That's timothyplan.com/sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
The abortion forces are ramping up for this election. They really are. It's just a strange and unsettling time to hear young women be so excited about abortion, sharing about their abortions proudly. It's an odd thing because it's a death. I've never, in all of our opposition to the abortion, the years that I've been fighting against it and just stressing the importance of life and the beauty of that for the moms and for the babies, I've never seen a pride about abortion. I've never seen that, but that's what we're seeing now. And so it's pretty vicious. It's hard to push back on that when people have crossed that line. And I think, the scripture does say, woe unto them who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness. But that's where we are. And that's why, I think some of the hardest of hearts can be reached if they can see their baby through ultrasound. And that's what preborn provides, this beautiful little clear picture of that tiny little baby inside of women. Stirs most of their hearts, over half of them, maybe 60% of them, and they choose to not terminate the life of their baby. I urge you to help us. $28 provides one ultrasound, and all you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Here we go with the rest of our conversation with J.D. Rivera, his description of what actually happened on January the 6th, 2021. All right, so then on the 6th, you know, I racked my brain. That's the first thing that went through my mind, of course. I'm looking for, and when you did have people in the crowd that looked odd, and the people, we have so many videos of Antifa knocking out glasses, windows, and they actually had a method. And I saw, even in the Capitol, when those guys broke the window where Ashley Babbitt was killed, I thought, that looks like Antifa. They're the ones who are always breaking windows.
There's guys in those videos that are well known to be a part of Antifa crowds.
Okay, so we, so
that is known.
We do know that, yeah. So we think that perhaps they were infiltrated to do those violent things. Now, does that mean that no J6er did any violence like that on January 6th?
Yeah, exactly. That's it doesn't mean that. Again, January 6ers unfortunately did some dumb things. There are some patriotic Americans, I still consider them patriots, they were there for the Stop the Steal rally, but they just, they kind of got into that mob. They got into that crowd of people that were doing stuff, but they didn't know that these people were, you know, infiltrators.
Right.
They thought they were other Trump supporters doing the same
thing. Well, it's confusing. It's like being in battle, right? I mean, it's confusing. You don't have perspective. You're just right there where you are. You're the guy next to you, and you can't possibly know that. That's why you have commanding officers who are have radios, and they can tell you. But
well, here's the thing with a lot of the J6ers that are being arrested, right? When it comes to these felony charges, they're getting the obstruction charges, all these things. Some of these J6ers were literally pushing these people away from breaking windows and pulling people off police officers and trying to help out police officers.
Right.
Those are the people that are getting attacked more than anybody else. People like Victoria White. She's in the War on Truth movie that I don't know if you've seen it yet, that I'm in as well. That's going to be today.
No, not yet.
Victoria White.
So Victoria was not killed, but she was beaten brutally.
She was beaten brutally. Yeah. Her story is horrible. Roseanne Boylan is one of the ones that was beaten brutally and killed.
And killed.
Ashley Babbitt, as we know. And all that stuff's still coming out, right? But it's crazy when you look at those individuals who are in the crowd who really couldn't defend themselves or were caught pulling people like Victoria. I'm going to just tell her story real quick, short. She was literally pulling people away from windows that they were breaking.
Roseanne was doing that.
Roseanne was doing that as well, too.
I didn't know that.
So there was people that were pulling people off cops, doing stuff like that, but in their case hearings, they're like, oh, well, you touched the police officer's riot shield, so that's assault and battery on a police officer. When literally all they're doing is pushing their hands up to kind of separate the crowds. That's really all they were doing. Now, people are going to go on this tangent and be like, that's not what was happening. We saw, no, you didn't see them. You saw a handful of people doing some bad things, and you have collectively decided as a whole that that's all of us. And I know that because I'm somebody who went to prison on misdemeanor charges. No, I wasn't there. You don't hear me talking other than a couple times. I didn't fight anybody. I wasn't violent. None of that stuff. But I am collectively put into that crowd of people who assaulted police officers and damaged the Capitol that day because people don't know how to look up things for themselves, and they would much rather just go with the flow of things because for some reason that makes them feel good. But the majority of us there, the majority of J6ers that are now in prison, still being charged and still being, you know, convicted, we, especially on misdemeanor charges, we were merely present. And that's it.
So, J.D., did you get charged with parading and disrupting an official proceeding? Mm-hmm. Did you get that one, too? Yep. That's the enhanced charge, though. But
not the disrupting one. So, let me see if I can pull up my charges real quick. But I got four of them. It's first thing popped up.
How fun.
Yeah. here are the ones I got. Entering, remaining in a restricted building or grounds. Disorderly conduct in the Capitol building, or disorderly conduct in Capitol building, disorderly conduct in, parading, demonstrating, or picketing a Capitol building. So two of these charges are the exact same. So really I should have only been charged two misdemeanors, if anything, but they just piled them on. So
yeah.
The other thing too that happened with me, we didn't find out till later, until I had my sentencing, that they decided to add the word violent to one of my charges. So on the disorderly conduct in a Capitol building.
You were violently filming?
Yeah, I was violently filming. In the disorderly conduct in a Capitol building, they added the word violent during my sentencing. Mm-hmm. That was never there. And you could see in the during my trial, the video evidence they use is 90% my videos. And then the other video evidence that they have, one, I wasn't even in the video. It was just them trying to make a point about trespassing. And then the other one was a video of a guy who he wasn't directly looking at me, but he was filming in my direction. And you could see me here like this. This is what I was doing in my film, doing exactly what I said I was doing. I'm there filming.
You're filming.
And they're like, we spotted him here on the Capitol. I never once said I wasn't at the Capitol. I never once said that I didn't go into the Capitol. Nothing that they were trying to charge him with. Like, they made it seem as if these charges, like I was fighting against any of that, which the demonstrating, picketing, rioting, all that stuff, I wasn't doing any of that.
Well.
But during the trial, all of the stuff they talked about was where my presence was. It had nothing to do with all the rest of those charges.
Well, I'm a pretty prejudiced person to talk to about this. Because I've seen it, pretty jaded, because we see how they've twisted everything, how they've enhanced the sentencing, and how they have lied about what people were doing. What Daniel Goodwin was in the Capitol, 10 minutes, something like that? And then he had house arrest for a year or something, and the family spent hundreds of thousands of dollars.
He was treated worse than I was, and he did far less than I did.
It's a sham. It's worse than a sham. It's a setup, and they made an example of you guys because they were trying to scare the rest of us, and it's worked really well, I have to say. But I want to know more now. Were you arrested right away, or May?
I was January 20th on Inauguration Day.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. I was the first person in Florida arrested. I was the first person in Florida arrested on these charges, and I was the first person to go to trial on misdemeanor charges. I went to trial. I didn't take a plea deal. But my story was swept on the rug. Like, why? I don't understand. But almost in just about every single trial that these J6ers are going on misdemeanor charges, my name's brought up, and my trial's brought up every single time because it was the first one. So.
Oh, lucky you. Yeah. Well, all right. So, JD, did you get arrested and incarcerated right away?
Just that day.
Like pre-trial detention? No, really? Okay. Because Jake Lang was still in pretrial detention, as far as I understand.
He's still in there, in D.C., I believe. So, yeah, it depends. Like, I'm in Florida. I'm in a predominantly Pensacola, Florida, Escambia County specifically, Matt Gaetz's district, right? So it's predominantly red district. So they weren't going to hold me. They.
So the trial, all right, so you were arraigned or whatever in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Did the FBI come to your home and...
Yeah, 40-plus FBI agents came to my house.
40?
Mm-hmm.
You have kids, right? Little ones?
Yes.
How many?
We have four kids.
Okay, so just give us a taste of what that was, what they did exactly.
Well, thank God. My wife and my kids actually went to school that morning, and about within 10, 15 minutes of them leaving the house is when the FBI came through our door.
So it was just you there?
It was me and my sister-in-law and her boyfriend at the time, because she was in the process of renovating her home, so we were just letting her stay for the time. She's the one that opened the door. And she was just like, I don't know what's going on. And her opening the door was them saying, we're coming in now. And they did. They came in with the guns, the rifles at the ready. I mean, he had two FBI agents pointing rifles at my face. There's no reason for it. Especially knowing, I mean, they came into my house on a warrant, one, that they wouldn't show us. On two, knowing that I had misdemeanor charges. Like, but they came at me as a domestic terrorist. And that was probably the most backstabbing thing I felt as an American, as a combat veteran. It was unfortunate because I've been through that. I got to go on convoys and patrols where we were doing that to actual terrorists, and for them to treat me the same way was extremely heartbreaking, to say the least.
Well, and you didn't have the benefit of knowing that there were, like, if that happens now, and it is happening now, actually, to people, because they have a long list. Mm-hmm. I think they have a goal of 3,000. At least they did a few months ago.
The fact that they have a goal is ridiculous.
Ridiculous. It's like a quota for police officers with traffic tickets. But anyway, you didn't have the benefit of knowing that they were doing this everywhere. I mean, this must have been a real shock to you.
No, we didn't know it was happening yet.
Okay, so they
again January 20th. I mean, that was 2 weeks after the January 6th.
Oh my gosh,
And I was one of the first ones.
So they arrest you. Mm-hmm. And did they put you in jail then?
They sent me to whatever FBI place they had there, downtown Pensacola. And I was there all morning till about 3, 4
o'clock. How did the agents treat you?
They didn't talk to me much, but I didn't talk to them until the interrogation portion of it. It wasn't a lot of talk, honestly. But I can tell you, they pretended to be my friend. They wanted every information they could potentially
I have a feeling. I have a theory that they didn't know. They weren't totally indoctrinated themselves into what the game plan was going to be here.
I don't know.
Do you think they were?
I think the ones on my case were. I can say because during my trial. Just listening to him talk and hearing him talk about me like I'm a domestic terrorist was one of the craziest things in my life. Because I'm like, dude, I told you everything that I'm telling you guys now. Nothing's changed. But you guys are talking about me as if I'm somebody who did.
But that was months later, right?
At the trial.
Look, this is a theory. It's just a theory. I just think, you know, that it had to get down into the DNA of the FBI. I don't think initially I surmise. Mm-hmm. That all the agents didn't know where this was all going, and that they got harder and harder and weirder and meaner as this went along.
Yeah.
But you might not agree, and maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I...
It's possible.
By the time your trial came, they'd been really poisoned.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I mean, again...
Okay, so the judge, did you get sentenced in Florida?
In D.C.
Okay.
But I did, yeah. I got sentenced in D.C. out of Florida.
So what judge?
Colleen Cotelli.
I don't know.
She's one of the worst judges out there right now. She's the judge that just sentenced an older lady.
The praying grandma?
Yes.
Okay, from Oklahoma.
Yes. She's the same judge. She's the same evil judge.
It's a cesspool of wickedness in D.C. I know. I've lived there many years.
Here's the thing. When Judge Cotelli sentenced me, or when she found me guilty... in her description, she said that I chose the side of the insurrection. Now, you remember that. Nobody had been charged with sedition or insurrection. Nobody was even charged with sedition yet. That wasn't even a talk on the table at the time. There might have been some people with potential, but nobody was convicted or found that. So for a judge to say you chose the side of the insurrection before anybody was even charged with sedition, nobody was charged with insurrection. Kind of tells you the bias in a judge. She shouldn't have said anything about an insurrection. There's a lot of things that she said that showed her complete bias, to include when my lawyer said, Your Honor, we have video evidence of people being let in by the police, and she laughs at him and goes, is that really what you're going to go with? I mean, this is on record. And it was at that moment where I'm like, okay, this is obviously not going to go our way. Unfortunately for my lawyer at the time, this is a brand new case for him. This is brand new in general because of what was going on.
Right.
So he wasn't as prepared
and
as he could
probably
have been.
Never dreamed what happened would happen.
But regardless, you go to D.C., you're going to be convicted.
That's right.
Unfortunately.
Oh, it's like I've said for years, the years I've lived there, that driving into the district, because I live by the Pentagon, was like going into a foreign country where I was a hostile. I was a hostile, mm-hmm. even with parking. I can't tell you how hostile it was. Just you felt it in mm-hmm. the District of Columbia, like it was a third world country or some opposing force, but not your country.
Right.
But all right. So JD, this must have been a terrible shock to you to get a sentence of eight months.
8 months.
And now you're a believer. Mm-hmm. You trust God like I do.
Yes.
And you had been a believer for a long time. How did this affect your faith?
Well, I wasn't a believer for a long time. I actually came to Christ in 2017.
Oh, I didn't know
so
that.
So I consider myself a baby Christian.
Okay,
still.
Okay.
At the time, not so much now. Okay. But it because of this, my faith grew stronger. My faith grew tremendously stronger. You know, January 6th actually mended some stuff, broken wounds and healing that me and my wife had to have. And we realized that we were best of friends and we needed each other through all of this. And for our kids specifically, you know, we just need to make sure that we had an inkling that I was going to prison. We thought it was going to be a much longer time. We did. So we were preparing ourselves spiritually for that. And literally, just like the same reason when I came to Christ, you know, it was the same thing. I'm giving this all to you. I don't know what you need from me, but I'm giving it all to you. So for us, again... It's a testimony. and it's a great testimony because we are victorious in this, because we're giving him all the glory. We came out stronger as a family. We came out stronger spiritually. When I got sentenced to prison, and you'll see it in the video, my daughter, who took it the hardest, we collectively as a family said, this is not Dad's prison sentence. This is a missions trip from God. And that's what we did with it. We turned it into a missions trip. And that missions trip hasn't ended. That's the great part about it. And it was. I was able to speak light into people who've never even had the opportunity of seeing it. I watched a man who was a back and forth Muslim and everything else turn to Christ.
Oh, wow.
Because of the very simple, you know, they say, just show them the love of Jesus. That's the best thing I can do, right? I'm no theologian, but I knew what Jesus would want me to do. And at that time, it was during Ramadan. And during Ramadan, for people that don't know, it's 40 days of fasting and praying.
Sort of. During the day, not at night.
So basically, just when the sun is up, you can't. At night, you can do whatever you want, basically. But the other Muslims within this community told this guy, because he's not from Afghanistan or the East, they're like, you can't pray with us. You got to pray by yourself. So he was just like, that's dumb. I mean, we're in here together. And I told him, I said, hey, I'll pray with you. I said, you want me to fast with you? I'll fast with you. So I fast. I did. I was just like, I'm going to do it. I got nothing else to do. So, you know, while we're praying, I'd pray my normal prayers, and we would talk about God and things like that. And that was the ultimate thing, is what people don't understand about Muslims is they believe in Jesus. It's not the way we do.
Just not that he's the son of God.
Right.
Yeah, the prophet.
So, but they love him.
That's interesting.
They actually love Jesus. And being able to have that conversation, that was the middle ground. All right, let's talk about Jesus then. Praying with him, doing all that, talking about Jesus. He told me, he's like, man, this whole time I thought what I thought was right was right. He's like, but you're showing me something different, bud. And it wasn't until after I got out of prison, he sent me a picture of him getting baptized.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's a testimony. It's an amazing testimony,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is an amazing testimony.
You know, there's people in there that where their walk from God was far, and I was able to talk life into them, and now they're back home, and they're going to church more often. You know, my job as a Christian is to know Christ, make Christ know. That is it, right? And then it's up to you whether or not you want him in your life.
Yes.
But I'm going to make him known to you through me the best I can. Not perfect, but I'm going to do the best I can. So our faith has grown tremendously. So to answer your question, we are devout Christians. We are not theologians. We are not perfect. We believe what the Bible says. We believe in Scripture. We believe in the family unit. We believe that God made a man and woman to be man and woman, to create children. It's in the Genesis, right?
Yeah.
Be fruitful, multiply.
And multiply, yeah.
It's his first commandment.
It does say that. Yes, it does. Did they want, you mean no childless cat women? It didn't ask us to be childless cat women?
No, it did not. It did not. He said to be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah.
Right? And that's in the first book of the Bible. He tells us what we need to do.
Yeah.
And that's all I do, right?
Well, JD, so, it's a story of redemption. As you told me that earlier,
absolutely.
And now I understand why you say that. But, of course, God, what man meant for evil, God meant for good. I have found, because in my long life, that God does not waste tragedy or trouble.
Yes.
The problem is people never know. They don't see that. We see the tragedy in the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
And God is so much at work behind the scenes.
Well, it's because the human psyche prefers tragedy for some strange reason.
That's true.
Bad news sells.
Yeah.
So tragedy is better than glorification.
Well, because maybe it has to do with our sin nature. You think,
mm-hmm.
maybe?
I think so.
JD, this has been great. So I want to recap now.
Mm-hmm.
You, what? ForHisGlory.tv?
Yes.
Is your business.
HisGlory.tv is where you can go to see the shows and stuff we have. Some amazing people.
And amazing shows. What's your? Where can they see your films? I can't read my own writing.
It's Arver. Arver Films. A R E.
E. Okay.
V I R.
Okay.
Films, and that's on YouTube.
Okay.
I have a couple of interviews that I started doing.
Okay.
With Taylor Hansen and a couple other people.
Okay.
Cool. I was trying to start my own documentary, but on my own dime and driving around the United States was pretty tough. I didn't have the backing yet. I didn't know David Summerall that well yet, but you know, God uses what he uses, does what he does.
What's your film?
War on Truth.
War on Truth. And mm-hmm. For those of you that on this film festival, we're at the 1A Film Festival. If you go to 1AFilmFestival.com, you can sign up and you can see all 12 of the new films that are being shown. Mm-hmm. And they are so far just incredible. And this would be your film, War on Truth, will be one of them.
Yeah, so right? I'm in the film. That's
you're
actually
in the film.
They came to my house and did a documentary on us going through what we were going through.
All right, so I'm recommending, as you've heard the podcast, I've been airing this for a week or two now, trying to encourage you to sign up for $25 so that you can see all 12 films. You can see it in your own time. Mm-hmm. You don't have to see it while we're here, and you can bring people into your home and show it. I guarantee you, you will not be sorry. You'll be enriched. I'm going to do the same thing when I get back home.
Start your own watch party.
Share Absolutely. It with your neighbors and friends, your churches. Mm-hmm. And J.D. Rivera, the Chicano
Patriot. I don't go by that anymore. That was the one that was taken out. I'm on my fifth new social media platforms. I've been banned over and over and over. So what happens?
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, J.D. It's great to hear your story. It's very encouraging. So God bless you.
Amen.
God
Sandy, bless thank you so much for having me here.
All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from the morning show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes that we have decided to re-engage with the daily news on Sandy Rios 24/7 as we once did in the mornings. I want to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. Just go to AFR.net or any podcast platform. You can also find Sandy Rios 24/7 at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, a fun thing. My book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now on Audible. Sometimes listening is better than reading. I recorded it in my own voice, which makes it even more personal for all of you who know me so well. Audible books are available on Amazon.com. God bless each and every one of you for your faithfulness to Him. My prayer is that as we stand together in this battle, we can finish well.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Well, that's J.D.'s story. Pretty gripping, isn't it? But of course, we know that the Justice Department is spreading its wings and going after so many people, especially during this election cycle. They certainly made an example of J6ers so that patriots would not feel free to come to their capital anymore. There was a time when that was such a joy. You brought your families. It was like an open house. And it was beautiful. But now people are even afraid to come to Washington because it's really like our government has turned against us. And I've been telling you another example, of course, is about the elections. They've just made an example of who I consider a friend of mine now, Tina Peters. In Colorado, I mentioned it recently, but she was just sentenced to 9 years, a gold star mom. And I want you to hear a news report from Colorado about how that went down. Let's listen.
You are no hero, you abused your position, and you're a charlatan.
And a Colorado judge with harsh words from Mesa County's former county clerk moments before handing down a sentence in her election tampering trial. Tina Peters will spend 9 years behind bars for tampering with Colorado voting machines. Good evening. I'm Michaela White in for Karen Lee.
And I'm Michael Spencer. Thanks so much for joining us on CBS News Colorado at 6. Peters is the first election official to be charged with a security breach amid false claims regarding the 2020 presidential election. A court convicted Peters for allowing a county security card to be misused to give a man access to the Mesa County election system. Spencer Wilson is your reporter in the mountains, and he was in the courtroom today when that sentence was handed down.
Each side got the chance to try and influence the judge's decision on sentencing, as there were no set parameters for what Tina Peters could face for her guilty charges. But those who spoke in defense of Peters were met with a judge who was quick to fact-check their claims.
Election officials are understandably concerned because
sorry,
the public...
Dr. Frank, you're suggesting that we're here today because of what the Secretary of State did?
Yes.
And not because Ms. Peters took the video in the first place and gave it to someone who then put it on the internet? That's your suggestion? You can go on. I don't need an answer.
The prosecution focused their interviews on the damage, both tangible and intangible, that Peters did not only to Mesa County, but the country, too, spreading distrust in a proven, functioning election system.
The only positive outcome of Tina's unlawful actions is one she didn't intend. Her actions awaken the network of individuals, these men and women across the country charged with protecting elections, to the real and present danger of insider threats.
Peters spoke for the first time in court as well, saying she was too weak to go to prison, and probation fit her crimes much better, crimes which she still did not condemn.
You know, I don't know if you've ever seen as clean a past as I have or present. But I did not do it. I did not do it, Your Honor, to disrespect the court or the law.
The judge gave her 9 years total behind bars, saying she was a privileged person who would do it all over again given the chance. And her denial of her wrongdoings only shows the dangerous precedent she sets.
This thought process, unfortunately, seems to consume so many in our country, regardless of race, gender, political affiliation, or the like, that what it is we hear and think can't possibly be wrong.
To sum it up, he had no mercy.
You abused your position, and you're a charlatan who used and is still using your prior position in office to peddle a snake oil that's been proven to be junk time and time again. In your world, it's all about you.
The judge explained to the defense that they have 21 days to appeal his sentencing, and considering this morning we walked into the courtroom with a couple of appeals already from the defense asking to push sentencing to a later date for Peters, which the judge did deny, which is why we have the sentencing we do, it's very possible there could be an appeal to his sentence. But the judge said before he let everyone go that he is at peace with the punishment he has given Peters. In Grand Junction, Spencer Wilson, covering Colorado First.
I bet he is. For right now, we'll see what happens in the future when he has to meet someone who brings real justice. Tina Peters, of course, is a Gold Star mom. She does. She's a strong believer in Christ. It was a Dominion voting machine, and she was the clerk in charge. She was the boss at that office, an elected official. And she brought attention to what she saw was malfeasance. Something went wrong. And she actually made that public after she couldn't get election officials to do anything about it. They came down upon her with a vengeance. We just did a show recently about the voting machines and the fact that they are connected to the internet, much to the chagrin of all those people that try to convince us that they weren't. We're learning more about these voting machines, how they can be manipulated and changed. Tina dared to say that and try to prove it. You notice even in that clip, they picked that really short clip of her speaking. They wouldn't let her defense speak. They would not let them present her arguments and her evidence against the prosecution. It was really an amazing thing. And you heard the judge. He tells her, you're a privileged person. He has no idea. You're a privileged person. In your life, it's all about you. Really? This is a judge saying that to her. And then he says, you're a privileged person, and you have caused doubt about a proven, functioning election process. Really? That's what the judge thinks. So he was very harsh, and as you just heard him say, he has no regrets. And I'm sure that's the way the judges feel in D.C., who are handing down these horrible sentences on the J6ers. And, of course, the common theme here is the J6ers went to the Capitol because they felt the election had been stolen. They went there to try to make sure that there was time taken in the electoral process to actually consider all the disputes that were happening in various states. And for that, they were slammed. It's just the right is wrong and wrong is right. That's where we're living. That's what J.D. experienced, and that's what Tina is certainly experiencing. By the way, I think she's about 68 years old, so 9 years in prison. 9 years in prison. Well, that's the way it is. We have an election coming up, and I think maybe we might want to remember these things when we're going into the voting booth. Heaven knows we need a change in the Justice Department. We need a change at every level of government. How disgusting that we would come to this point. Nevertheless, you heard a beautiful story from J.D. because God does not waste these precious times. He doesn't waste our trouble, our trials, and he won't waste it with J.D. Didn't waste it with J.D., and he will not waste it with Tina Peters. Well, I want to thank our sponsors, Timothy Plan, Put Your Money Where Your Values Are, and Discover How to Be a Biblically Responsible Investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy, or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.